From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, our continuing coverage of how the Texas legislature is working to make voting more difficult in Texas.
There are some right and proper consequences of some of the language in these vast bills that are SB 7 and HB 6.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The Republican leadership of Texas state government is continuing their drive for an overhaul of Texas elections that will make being able to vote more difficult for many. The lawmakers behind the bill say this is necessary because the state needs greater security against voter fraud. Voting rights activists say that's a sham, and the real reason is to suppress the voting in communities more likely to vote for Democrats. This week, Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, a Republican, condemned those who opposed these so-called voter security bills.
Nothing has changed for mail-in ballots, election day, or early voting. And anyone who says different is lying to you, whether they write with a pen, talk with a microphone, or hold political office.
Patrick's statement is objectively, clearly, absolutely, and without a doubt, 100% false. Some major prominent Texas corporations this week joined the call to protect voting rights, and that drew a verbal tirade from Governor Greg Abbott.
We have American Airlines, we have AT&T, we have Dell Computers, and we have others who have taken a position against the election law reforms we made in the state of Texas, where the CEOs of these companies and the leaders of these companies admitted they had no idea what the Texas law said or what the Texas proposed laws say before taking a position against it. They need to stay out of politics, especially when they have no clue what they're talking about.
Grassroots opposition to these bills continues to grow. On Thursday, about 100 voting rights activists gathered outside the AT&T corporate headquarters in downtown Dallas. As KERA's Christopher Conley reports, it's part of a statewide campaign to pressure corporations to oppose Republican bills that would make it harder to vote.
The activists want to send a message, stand on the side of voting rights, or be party to an ugly new chapter in Texas history. Pastor Freddie Haynes of Friendship West Baptist Church says over the summer, AT&T declared that Black Lives Matter. But now the company is failing to support Black people's right to vote.
Right now in Texas, voter suppression is going on in the name of voter integrity. But all of us ain't falling for the okey-doke because we recognize it has ugly roots.
AT&T released a statement saying the right to vote is sacred and calling it the single best way to ensure everyone's voice is heard. It didn't mention the sweeping GOP bills, which would limit early voting, ban drive-through voting, and make it a crime to proactively send out vote-by-mail applications. Jane Hamilton is from the Barbara Jordan Leadership Institute.
This is not a time for any corporation to sit on the sideline.
Fort Worth-based American Airlines and Round Rock-based Dell Technologies have opposed the legislation. If the activists have their way, more Texas companies will follow suit. I'm Christopher Connolly in Dallas.
One of the leading voices raised against the Republican election overhaul bills is former Congressman Beto O'Rourke.
Texas Republicans are doing their best, trying their hardest to stop people in this state from being able to vote and participate in our elections. And it's not just anyone in this state. It happens to be young voters. It happens to be Black voters and voters of color. It happens to be disabled voters. And it happens to be voters in big cities. And it happens to be voters who are shift workers in a state where the minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour. It's the single greatest attack on voting rights in Texas in at least a decade. And when you connect it with what just happened in Georgia and the pending voter suppression legislation in 41 other state legislatures in this country, it's the single greatest attack on democracy and voting rights since the Voting Rights Act was signed into law in 1965 by President Lyndon Johnson. That's what's happening in Texas right now.
So when all these different states are doing this very similar thing, is this a organized, systemic way of trying to address what happened in 2020, the loss of Donald Trump?
You cannot help but see that Black voters in Georgia propelled Joe Biden's victory in that state in the Electoral College, the first for a Democratic nominee for president in decades. You can't ignore the leadership that those same voters showed in the surprise Senate runoff victories of Senator Raphael Warnock and Senator John Ossoff in January of this year. And you can't help but see in Texas, a state that is more voter suppressed than any other in the union. It's harder to vote here in Texas than it is in any other state, that despite those challenges, Black voters and voters in communities of color were able to overcome so many of these barriers and show up in record numbers and produce one of the greatest voter turnouts in Texas history. It's no accident that those things happened. And immediately following these elections, you have a very organized, very concerted effort to restrict access to the ballot and to try to stop Black voters and voters in communities of color and other voters from being able to fully participate in our democracy and choose our representatives and the course and direction that our state and our country will take.
Now, for the people who are really pay attention to every word and accuracy in talking about this issue, it's generally said that in Texas, it's the hardest state to register and to vote. And the registering part is a hurdle in Texas.
That's right. So Texas, for example, does not allow for online voter registration in the year 2021. You are still required to do this by and large through paper, perhaps with the help of a volunteer deputy registrar. My wife, Amy, and I actually went down to the El Paso County Courthouse yesterday and got deputized to become volunteer deputy registrar so that we can register folks to vote. But even this tool or avenue for registration is being challenged. There's actually a bill pending in the Texas state legislature right now to do away with the VDR program, making it even harder for people to register to vote. In fact, David, in 2020, despite record turnout in Texas, there were still 7 million Texans who did not cast a ballot, 7 million Texans who did not participate in the most important election in our country's history. And it's not for any lack of love for democracy or any want of important issues, whether it's climate change, as we just saw during Winter Storm Uri or Hurricane Harvey in 2017, whether it's gun violence with four of the worst gun violence massacres in U.S. history taking place in Texas over the last 3 years, whether it's the issue of a minimum wage where we are the lowest in the country, or healthcare where we have more uninsured than any other state in America. The defining issues for this country come to a head in Texas. So the explanation has to be that the leaders in this state, all Republican at a statewide level and majorities in the House and the Senate in Texas, have intentionally placed barriers, whether it's 750 polling place closures from 2013 to 2018, twice the number that you've seen in any other state, concentrated in the fastest growing Black and Latino neighborhoods, whether it's the racial gerrymander, where literally Black Texans were drawn out of congressional districts to diminish their voting power. Those aren't my words. Those are the words of a three-judge federal panel in 2017, which described it in those terms. It's the harshest voter ID laws in the country, where you cannot use your student ID at Texas Southern University to prove who you are at the ballot box, but you can use your license to carry a firearm to prove who you are at the ballot box. All of these conspire to make it harder for people to vote. And then in addition to all of this, and to add insult to injury, we're already 50th in the country in ease of access and registration to vote and to participate. You have these new measures, which would make it harder to vote early, which would make it harder to vote at odd hours. Let's say you're working your second shift and you get off at 2 a.m. In 2020, thanks to the leadership in Harris County, you could vote at a 24-hour voting center. With this new legislation, if it becomes law, you will not be able to do it. It makes it harder for the disabled to get help from a family member or a caregiver in filling out their ballot and sending that ballot in. And as you probably know, it gives poll watchers, so-called, free rein inside of the polling places to include allowing these poll watchers to videotape voters, which is absolutely a form of intimidation, because we know how poll watchers have intimidated Black and brown voters going back decades in the state. And lastly, there are 15 new or enhanced criminal penalties in this pending legislation in Texas. Why is that important? Because when you look at what our twice indicted Attorney General Ken Paxton has done with his, I think it's called his Election Integrity Enforcement Unit, 72% of their enforcement actions have been taken against Black or Latino Texans in this state, well out of proportion to their representation in the general population. So that's what's coming down the pike right now. The good news, however, is that it's not signed into law yet, and there's still time for us to act and still time for us to stop this.
We hear a lot about election security. This is all about election security, and that we should have zero tolerance. That is a phrase that we have heard from members of the Texas House Elections Committee. Zero tolerance. Is that a lot to ask?
I was listening to someone who ran the calculation on the incidence of voter fraud in Texas. It stands now at 0.000004%, meaning that it is more likely for you to be struck by lightning in the state of Texas than for you to encounter a verified case of voter fraud in the state of Texas. So no one would argue against remaining vigilant against the prospect that someone out there might try to take advantage of our elections. And talk to any one of our 254 Texas County elections administrators, and they'll tell you that they are doing everything in their power to make sure that we stop even an attempt at voter fraud. But given the number that I just laid out, this is clearly a solution in search of a problem. We don't have a problem with voter fraud in Texas. Now, if the state legislature is looking for a problem to fix, I've got a few that they can look at. Thanks to great reporting from the Houston Chronicle, we now know that nearly 200 Texans died during the power outage following the winter storm in February. People who literally froze to death in their homes or died of carbon monoxide inhalation trying to get warm in their garages. We know that more than 50,000 of our fellow Texans have died of COVID, and that we still have a almost random distribution of vaccines in some of our 254 counties where folks don't know the rhyme and reason in finding out how they can get on the list and protect themselves in a state where disproportionately those who have died are African-American, Mexican-American, and Native American. Those are some challenges I'd love the state legislature to focus on. Expand Medicaid while you're at it and protect more vulnerable Texans so that they don't die of the common cold or the flu or diabetes or curable cancers, all of which is taking place in the state right now because people literally cannot afford to get health care. So there are problems out there in need of solutions. This is not one of them.
How do you think this is going to play out? We do have a lot of Republican support for these bills, and Governor Abbott says he's going to sign them. What happens?
I take some hope in the precedent set in 2017 when the Republican-controlled legislature also tilted at a solution in search of a problem, and that was the bathroom bill, which sought to scare people about transgender children and vilify and demean and also scare those kids themselves who are four times more likely, we now know, to take their lives or harm themselves when they're faced with that kind of pressure and stress and hatred. You know, everyday Texans, Republicans and Democrats and independents alike, not the people in elected office, but the people of Texas, got on down to the state capitol, and they drove the 8.5 hours from El Paso or the 6 hours from Nacogdoches or the 5 hours from Corpus Christi. And they made themselves heard. That compounded by the public pressure presented by Texas businesses who stepped up and stood out there, perhaps at some you know, risk or cost to their bottom line to do the right thing, all of us together were able to prevail successfully upon the state legislature to stop, because it was going to hurt the most vulnerable Texans, because it was going to hurt us economically, because it just was not good for the state. I think all of those same things hold true for SB 7 and HB 6, the two bills in question right now. You have Dell stepping up once again. You have American Airlines stepping up to make sure that they make a stand for voting rights and against voter suppression. You have people making these same long drives, this time in the middle of a pandemic, to testify for the 2 minutes they get in front of the state legislature. I've been really inspired by the way that people have organized. And there's also a really similarly compelling economic argument. Now, beyond the moral imperative at question here, which is, should you take anyone's right to vote away in this country? Beyond that, as compelling as that is, the Texas Civil Rights Project just commissioned a study from Texas economist Dr. Ray Perryman about the economic impact of SB 7 and HB 6 if they were to become law. And he found that the negative cost to Texas just in the next 4 years in terms of internal costs comes to something like $14.5 billion, job losses measured in the thousands, and actually well over 10,000 job losses. Why is that? Because this is not just an issue of justice or democracy or access to the ballot box. It impacts and affects our lived experiences. You know, the quality of our kids' schools suffers when we're not able to vote for the trustee in the school board election. Where bond money gets spent in a given community is decided in part by who turns out to vote from what part of town and what they look like and whether their communities are historically underserved. That state challenge of expanding Medicaid, not going to get solved if you've written millions of your fellow Texans out of the decision-making process by keeping them from the ballot box. And all of that has impacts on what we earn, our quality of life, and what kind of future we can offer our kids. So I think when we look at it in those terms, this circular argument proposed by Republicans who cannot literally find an incidence of voter fraud, famously or infamously, depending on your perspective, our Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick offered $1 million reward, and he has yet to pay out $1 million reward for anyone who could confirm an incidence of voter fraud. He's been unable to find anyone. He hasn't paid a dime of that $1 million. And when pressed, they'll say this: well, look, David, maybe there isn't a specific instance that I can point to of voter fraud, but the fact is, when we poll our constituents, they're really concerned about this voter fraud. And the reason that's a circular argument is because they are akin to the arsonist who's lit the fire and then wants to show up with the fire truck and get credit for putting it out. They've stoked anxiety and trafficked in the big lie about fraud in the 2020 election, and that somehow Donald Trump won that and that Joe Biden's not the legitimate president of the United States of America. Peddling those lies and confusing the facts for the people of Texas in this country, it's no wonder that one might think that there is a problem here. And that's why it's so important that we ground our conversations, our reporting, and the debate on this issue in the facts. And when we do, I really do think you can shift public sentiment sufficient to produce the pressure necessary to create the political will to do the right thing. And by the way, and I'm sure you know this, there are Democrats in the state legislature certainly who oppose this. I bet every single one of them. There are also Republicans. I just read yesterday that Republican Representative Lyle Larson is opposed to this legislation. And I don't know that he's alone as a representative of that party in the state ledge. So I'm hopeful. And I don't think it's a done deal that we're going to be able to stop this. I just know that it's possible. And it's within our capacity to do this. And so we just got to keep on fighting.
Beto O'Rourke is a Democrat and former congressman from El Paso. He's leading an organized effort to oppose Republican election reform bills now in the legislature. The officials actually in charge of running our elections and following Texas election law are the election administrators and county clerks across the state. About half of the 254 counties in Texas have a full-time appointed elections administrator. They are nonpartisan, professional, highly trained in understanding the complex and often contradictory Texas election code. Chris Davis is the elections administrator for Williamson County and is the legislative chairman for the Texas Association of Elections Administrators.
SP7 and HP6, our association testified on a rather neutral with comments, questions for clarification, and just an attempt to really educate the authors, supporters, sponsors, and lawmakers on the processes that could be affected adversely even if these bills had passed.
Has the Texas Elections Administrators Association, were y'all consulted as these bills were crafted, when these lawmakers were saying, well, let's throw this in the bill and this needs to go in there and this needs to be fixed? Did they have a conversation with the Texas election administrators about what needs to be fixed?
In the case of SB7 and HB6, not to our knowledge, and I want to couch that, David, not to our knowledge as far as membership of the Texas Association of Election Administrators, were our members really consulted in the crafting of this. We think a lot of trouble could have been avoided had we had that seat at the table with authors, and we could explain the consequences. And there's some right and proper consequences of some of the language in these vast bills that are SB7 and HB6. But there's also, I think, some unfortunate consequences if these bills were to carry through and be signed into law.
This last election that we had, November 2020, how did it work out? Was it successful?
It was a raging success in Texas. We did extremely well, given the challenge and hurdles that we had as county election officers. When I say that, I mean election administrators, as well as county clerks and tax assessor collectors and their VR duties.
But we're hearing that Texas has to overhaul its election system in this legislative session. Like you said, these are vast bills looking to make significant changes in how people vote because of what happened in November. So
right.
What happened in November?
Or perhaps the perception of what happened in November, and maybe the perception amongst certain groups of what happened in November in other states, and the automatic assumption that the very same thing may have happened in Texas. And we, you know, we're biased, we're election administrators, but we reject that notion that, you know, our elections were true. They had integrity. They had transparency.
So are you aware of any sort of fraud that happened at a scale that would be considered significant?
No, we're not, and I'm glad you couched it that way. At a scale that's considered significant, what does significant mean? Outcome changing at the root level, and no, we're not. I mean, it's true that voter fraud can happen more readily in absentee voting than it can in in-person voting, particularly in Texas. There's measures like voter ID for in-person voting. But even that scale for absentee voting is still remote, and it's still exceedingly rare, and certainly not, by our accounting, outcome affecting in almost, you know, any kind of race. I guess it could be argued the smaller the race, the smaller a turnout in a race, the more impact that even the, you know, one incident of fraud can have. And that's true. In our view, the rhetoric has outpaced reality. I think, you know, it's been asked of us, you know, a zero tolerance, is it a reasonable standard for voter fraud? And none of us, election administrators, voter registrars, We do not tolerate election fraud. And in that sense, we do have a zero tolerance. But we're mindful of the costs of some of these measures. And if the costs and removing, and the costs of accessibility or you know, for voters to actually exercise their franchise, we're seeing a balance that's a bit skewed. And, people have often used the term, is the juice worth the squeeze? And I'm not certain that the juice is worth the squeeze that we're seeing on voters' ability to vote.
So we are seeing in this new legislation, poll watchers would be given extraordinary powers and authority at the polls to supervise how the election is being carried out. Poll watchers are partisan activists. They have no standardized training. They don't take a significant oath. There is very little penalties for poll watchers who act out. I've seen in my election coverage over the years, sometimes poll watchers and election workers and election administrators don't see eye to eye on how things are working.
We can occasionally see that. I want to, provide, at the outset that there's still a necessary component in a successful election. Poll watchers are. They're a necessary component in the transparency. That doesn't negate anything that you said. And all the things that you said can be found to be true at various times and in various locations throughout the state. And what we're concerned about is that swing of the pendulum in favor of the poll watcher at the cost of or at the usurping of the authority of a presiding judge or the chief poll worker at a polling place, be it during early voting or election day. And that's what we've tried to caution against in our testimony as an association in both SB 7 and HB 6, right? Allowing poll watchers to essentially wantonly record anything, almost anything they deem recordable or worthy of recording. And in this day and age, could necessarily also mean live streaming at is problematic in the extreme.
Poll watchers would also have the ability to challenge what's happening at the poll with the process if they feel that's the wording is something improper is happening. They have the ability to shut down voting until the election judge can satisfy them that nothing is going on or something needs to be fixed. Is that a concern?
That's our reading in various in some of the versions of these bills, right? That disruptive process. And I like that you stress the word feel, right? Their perception, perhaps to their untrained eye, most likely to their untrained eye.
Yeah, but these poll watchers, they see you as an adversary. I mean, I've heard their testimony. I've talked to some of these people. They have these incredible versions of events that just don't stand up to reality, but they are convinced that there's something weird going on. Files are being deleted, things are being switched. There's something nefarious happening in these polling stations. Is this something that you recognize when I describe the scene to you?
You're not wrong. You're seeing what we're seeing. You're at the committee hearings. You're hearing what we're hearing, and a lot of what's being said isn't exactly what we think is transpiring at the polling places, which is even more so we feel necessitates our presence and testimony and our presence as an association.
Chris Davis is the elections administrator for Williamson County and is the legislative chairman for the Texas Association of Elections Administrators. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.